The eye was very much brighter than now, and it was blue-green, not red, with a red dot at one edge.
It could have been a portrait, Blaine suggested.
He took out his pocket computer and scrawled Church of Him across its face, then punched for information. The box linked with the ship's library, and information began to roll across its face.
It says the Church of Him believes that the coal sack, with that one red eye showing, really is the face of God. Couldn't they have retouched it to make the eye more impressive?
Rod continued to sound interested.
Time enough to say something about wasting his time when the middies were through. If they were wasting time.
But,
said Potter.
Sir,
said Staley, leaning too far forward in his chair.
One at a time. Mr. Staley.
I didn't just ask Potter, sir. I checked with Commander Sinclair. He says his grandfather told him the moat was once brighter than Murkison's eye, and bright green. And the way Gavin's describing that hollow. Well, sir, stars don't radiate all one color, so...
All the more reason to think the hollow was retouched. But it is funny, with that intruder coming straight out of the moat.
Light, Potter said firmly.
Light sail, Rod shouted in sudden realization.
Good thinking.
The whole bridge crew turned to look at the captain.
Renner, did you say the intruder is moving faster than it ought to be?
Yes, sir, Renner answered from his station across the bridge.
If it was launched from a habitable world circling the moat, could it have used a battery of laser cannon?
Sure, why not? Renner wheeled over.
In fact, you could launch with a small battery, then add more cannon as the vehicle got farther and farther away. You get a terrific advantage that way. If one of the cannon breaks down, you've got it right there in your system to repair it.
Like leaving your motorhome, Potter cried. And you still able to use it.
Well, there are efficiency problems, depending on how tight the beam can be held, Renner answered. Pity you couldn't use it for braking, too. Have you any reason to believe?
Rod left them telling the sailing master about the variations in the moat. For himself, he didn't particularly care. His problem was, what would the intruder do now?
It was 20 hours to rendezvous when Renner came to Blaine's post and asked to use the captain's screens. The man apparently could not talk without a view screen connected to a computer. He would be mute with only his voice.
Captain, look, he said, and threw a plot of the local stellar region on the screen. The intruder came from here. Whoever launched it fired a laser cannon, or a set of laser cannon, probably a whole mess of them on asteroids, with mirrors to focus them, for about 45 years. So the intruder would have a beam to travel on. The beam and the intruder both came straight in from the moat.
But there'd be records, Blaine said. Somebody would have seen that the moat was putting out coherent light.
Renner shrugged.
How good are New Scotland's records?
Let's just see.
It took only moments to learn that astronomical data from New Scotland were suspect, and no such records were carried in MacArthur's library because of that.
Oh, well. Let's assume you're right.
But that's the point. It's not right, Captain,
Renner protested.
You see, it is possible to turn in interstellar space. What they should have done...
The new path left the moat at a slight angle to the first.
Again, they coast most of the way.
At this point, where the intruder would have been well past New Cal, we charge the ship up to 10 million volts. The background magnetic field of the galaxy gives the ship a half turn, and it's coming toward the New Caledonia system from behind. Meanwhile, whoever is operating the beam has turned it off for 150 years. Now he turns it on again. The probe uses the beam for braking.
You sure that magnetic effect would work?
It's high school physics, and the interstellar magnetic fields have been well mapped, Captain.
Well then, why didn't they use it?
I don't know,
Renner cried in frustration.
Maybe they just didn't think of it.
Maybe they were afraid the lasers wouldn't last.
Maybe they didn't trust whoever they left behind to run them.
Captain, we just don't know enough about them.
I know that, Renner. Why get in such a sweat about it? If our luck holds, we'll just damn well ask them. A slow, reluctant smile broke across Renner's face. But that's cheating. Oh, go get some sleep. Rod woke to the sound of the speakers. Gravity shift in 10 minutes. Stand by for change to 1 standard gravity in 10 minutes. Blaine smiled. 1 gravity. And felt the smile tighten. 1 hour to match velocities with the intruder. He activated his watch screens to see a blaze of light fore and aft. MacArthur was sandwiched between 2 suns. Now Cal was as large as Sol, seen from Venus, but brighter. Cal was a hotter star. The intruder was a smaller disk, but brighter still. The sail was concave. It was effort merely to use the intercom.
Sinclair! Engineering. Aye, aye, Captain.
Rod was pleased to see that Sinclair was in a hydraulic bed.
How's the field holding, Sandy?
Very well, Captain. Temperature steady.
Thank you.
Rod was pleased. The Langston field absorbed energy. That was its basic function. It absorbed even the kinetic energy of exploding gas, or radiation particles, with an efficiency proportional to the cube of the incoming velocities. In battle, the hellish fury of hydrogen torpedoes and the concentrated photon energies of lasers would strike the field and be dispersed, absorbed, contained. As the energy levels increased, the field would begin to glow, its absolute black becoming red, orange, yellow, climbing up the spectrum toward the violet. That was the basic problem of the Langston field. The energy had to be radiated away. If the field overloaded, it would release all the stored energy in a blinding white flash, radiating inward as well as outward. It took ship's power to prevent that, and that power was added to the field's stored energies as well. When the field grew too hot, ships died. Quickly. Normally, a warship could get hellishly near a sun without being in mortal danger. Her field never growing hotter than the temperature of the star, plus the amounts added to maintain control of the field. Now, with a sun before and another behind, the field could radiate only to the sides, and that had to be controlled, or MacArthur would experience lateral accelerations. The sides were getting narrower, and the sun's bigger, and the field hotter. A tinge of red showed on Rod's screens. It wasn't an impending disaster, but it had to be watched. Normal gravity returned. Rod moved quickly to the bridge and nodded to the watch midshipman.
General quarters, battle stations.
Alarms hooted through the ship. For 124 hours, the intruder had shown no awareness of MacArthur's approach. It showed none now, and it drew steadily closer. The light sail was a vast expanse of uniform white across the aft screens, until Renner found a small black dot. He played with it until he had a large black dot, sharp-edged, whose radar shadow showed it 4,000 kilometers closer to MacArthur than the sail behind it.
"That's our target, sir," Renner announced. "They probably put everything in one pod, everything that wasn't part of the sail. One weight at the end of the shrouds to hold the sail steady."
"Right. Get us alongside it, Mr. Renner. Mr. Whitbread, my compliments to the Yeoman of Signals, and I want to send messages in clear. As many bands as he can cover. Low power."
"Yes, sir. Recording."
"Hello, light sail vessel. This is Imperial Ship MacArthur. Give our recognition signals. Welcome to New Caledonia and the Empire of Man. We wish to come alongside. Please acknowledge. Send that in Anglic, Russian, French, Chinese, and anything else you can think of. If they're human, there's no telling where they're from."
15 minutes to match. Ship's gravity changed again, as Renner began to match velocities and positions with the intruder's cargo pod instead of the sail. Rod took a moment to answer Sally's call.
"Make it fast, Sally, if you please. We're under battle conditions."
"Yes, Rod, I know. May I come to the bridge?"
"Afraid not. All seats occupied."
"I'm not surprised. Rod, I just wanted to remind you of something. Don't expect them to be simple."
"I beg your pardon?"
"Just because they don't use Alderson drive, you'll expect them to be primitive. Don't. And even if they were primitive,
primitive doesn't mean simple. Their techniques and ways of thought may be very complex. I'll keep it in mind. Anything else? Okay, hang on, Sally. Whitbread, when you've got no other duties, let Miss Fowler know what's going on. He closed the intercom from his mind and looked at the stern screen, even as Staley shouted. The intruder's light sail was rippling. Reflected light ran across it in great, ponderous, wavy lines. Rod blinked, but it didn't help. It is very difficult to see the shape of a distorted mirror. That could be our signal, Rod said. They're using the mirror to flash. The glare became blinding, and all the screens on that side went dead. The forward scanners were operative and recording. They showed a wide, white disk. The star, New Caledonia, very close, and approaching very fast. 6% of the velocity of light, and they showed it with most of the light filtered away. For a moment, they also showed several odd black silhouettes against that white background. Nobody noticed, in that terrible moment when MacArthur was burned blind, and in the next moment, the images were gone. Kevin Renner spoke into the stunned silence.
"They didn't have to shout," he complained.
"Thank you, Mr. Renner," Rod said icily.
"Have you other, perhaps more concrete suggestions?"
MacArthur was moving in erratic jolts, but the light sail followed her perfectly.
"Yes, sir," Renner said. "We'd do well to leave focus of that mirror."
"Damage control, Captain," Cargill reported from his station aft. "We're getting a lot of energy into the field, too much and damned fast, with none of it going anywhere. If it were concentrated, it would burn holes in us. But the way it washes across, we can hold maybe 10 minutes.
"Captain, I'll steer around behind the sail," Renner said. "At least we've got sunside scanners, and I can remember where the pod was."
"Never mind that. Take us through the sail," Rod ordered.
"But we don't know—"
"That was an order, Mr. Renner, and you're in a Navy ship."
"Aye, aye, sir."
The field was brick red and growing brighter, but red wasn't dangerous. Not for a while. As Renner worked the ship, Rod said casually, "You may be assuming the aliens are using unreasonably strong materials. Are you?"
"It's a possibility, sir."
MacArthur jolted. She was committed now. Renner seemed to be bracing himself for a shock.
"But the stronger the materials are, Mr. Renner, the thinner they will spread them, so as to pick up the maximum amount of sunlight for the weight. If they have very strong thread, they will weave it thin to get more square kilometers per kilo, right? Even if meteors later get a few square kilometers of sail, well, they still made a profit, didn't they? So they'll make it just strong enough." "Yes, sir," Renner sang.
He was driving at 4 G's, keeping Cal directly astern. He was grinning like a thief, and he was no longer bracing himself for the crash.
"Well, I convinced him," Rod thought, and braced himself for the crash.
The Langston field was yellow with heat. Then, suddenly, the sunward scanners showed black, except for the green-hot edge of MacArthur's own field, and a ragged, blazing silhouette of white where MacArthur had ripped through the intruder's sail.
"Hell, we never felt it," Rod laughed.
"Mr. Renner, how long before we impact the sun?"
45 minutes, sir. Unless we do something about it."
"First things first, Mr. Renner. You keep us matched up with the sail and right here."
Rod activated another circuit to reach the gunnery officer.
"Crawford, put some light on that sail and see if you can find the shroud connections. I want you to cut the pod off that parachute before they fire on us again."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Crawford seemed happy at the prospect. There were 32 shrouds in all. 24 around the edge of the circular fabric mirror, and a ring of 8 nearer the center. Conical distortions in the fabric told where they were. The back of the sail was black. It flashed to vapor under the pinpoint attack of the forward laser batteries. Then the sail was loose, billowing and rippling as it floated toward MacArthur. Again the ship swept through, as if the light sail were so many square kilometers of tissue paper. And the intruder's pod was falling loose toward an F-8 sun.
35 minutes to impact, Renner said without being asked.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. Commander Cargill, take the con. You will take that pod in tow. And Rod felt a wild internal glee at Renner's astonishment. 7. The Crazy Eddie Probe.
But,
said Renner, and pointed at Cal's growing image on the bridge screens. Before he could say anything else, MacArthur leaped ahead at 6 G's. No smooth transition this time. Jolt meters swung wildly as the ship hurtled straight toward the looming sun.
Captain!
Through the roaring blood in his ears, Blaine heard his exec call from the afterbridge.
Captain, how much damage can we sustain?
It was an effort to speak.
Anything that'll get us home, Rod gasped. Roger!
Cargill's orders sounded through the intercom.
Mr. Potter, is hangar deck clear to vacuum? All shuttles stowed?
Yes, sir.
The question was irrelevant under battle conditions, but Cargill was a careful man.
Open the hangar doors, Cargill ordered. Captain, we might lose the hangar deck hatches. Rape 'em. I'm bringing the pod aboard fast. No time to match velocities. We'll take damage.
You have the con, Commander. Carry out your orders. There was a red haze on the bridge. Rod blinked, but it was still there. Not in the air, but in his retinas. 6 gravities was too much for sustained effort. If anyone fainted, well, they'd miss all the excitement.
Kelly!
Rod barked. When we turn ship, take the Marines aft and stand by to intercept anything coming out of that pod. And you'd better move fast. Cargill won't hold acceleration.
Aye, aye, sir.
6 gravities, and Kelly's gravel rasp was the same as ever. The pod was 3,000 kilometers ahead, invisible even to the clearest vision, but growing steadily on the bridge screens. Steadily but slowly. Much too slowly, even as Cal seemed to grow too fast. 4 minutes at 6 gravities. 4 minutes of agony. Then the alarms hooted. There was a moment of blessed relief. Kelly's Marines clattered through the ship, diving in the low, shifting gravity, as MacArthur turned end for end. There wouldn't be acceleration couches back there where the Marines would cover hangar deck. Webbing straps to suspend the men in corridors. Others in the hangar space itself hung like flies in a spider web. Weapons ready. Ready for what? The alarms sounded, and jolt meters swung again as MacArthur braked toward the pod. Rod turned his screen controls with an effort. There was hangar deck, cold and dark, the fuzzy outline of the inner surface of the ship's defensive field, an impossible black. Good, he thought. No significant heat storage. Plenty of capacity to take up the rotational energy of the pod, if it had any, slow down the impact to something that MacArthur might be able to handle. 8 minutes at 6 G's, the maximum the crew would be able to stand. Then the intruder was no longer ahead, as MacArthur turned and fell toward it sideways. The crushing acceleration ended. Then there was low side thrust, as Cargill fired the port batteries to slow their headlong rush to the pod. It was cylindrical, with one rounded end, tumbling through space. As it turned, Rod saw that the other end was jagged, with a myriad of projections. 32 projections? But there should have been shrouds trailing from those knobs, and there was nothing. It was moving up to MacArthur far too fast, and it was too big to fit in the hangar deck. The thing was massive, too damn massive, and there was nothing to break with to the sides but the port batteries. It was here. Hangar deck camera showed the rounded end of the intruder, dull and metallic, pushing through the Langston field, slowing, the rotation stopping, but still it moved relative to MacArthur. The battle cruiser surged sidewise, terribly, throwing the crew against their harness straps, while the rounded end of the pod grew and grew and crunch. Rod shook his head to clear it of the red mist which had formed again.
Get us out of here, Mr. Renner. Take the con.
Jolt meters swung before the acceleration alarms.
Renner must have set up the course in advance and slapped the keys the instant he was given control. Blaine peered at the dials through the crimson mist. Good. Renner wasn't trying anything fancy. Just blast lateral to MacArthur's course and let the sun whip her around. Were they accelerating in the plane of Cal's planets? Be tricky to rendezvous with Lermontov for hydrogen. If they couldn't bring Mac in on this pass, she'd have dry tanks. Fuzzily, Blaine touched display controls and watched as the main computer showed a course plot. Yes, Renner had set it up properly. And fast work, too. Let him do it, Rod thought. Renner's competent, better astrogator than I am. Time to inspect the ship. What happened to her when we took that thing aboard? But all the screens covering that area were blank. Cameras burned off or smashed. Outside, it wasn't much better. Fly her blind, Mr. Renner, Blaine ordered. Cameras would just boil off anyway. Wait until we're moving away from Cal. Damage report, Skipper. Go ahead, Commander Cargill. We've got the intruder clamped in with the hangar doors. It's jammed in solid. I don't think we can rattle it around with normal acceleration. I don't have a full report, but that hangar deck will never be the same, sir. Anything major, Number One? No, sir. I could give you the whole list. Minor problems, things jarred loose, equipment failed under impact stress. But it boils down to this. If we don't have to fight, we're in good shape. Fine. Now see what you can get me from the Marines. The comm lines to Kelly's station seem to be out. Aye, aye, sir. Somebody would have to move around at 6 G's to carry out that order, Blaine thought. Hope to God he can do it in a travel chair. A man might just slither along under that strain, but he wouldn't be good for much afterwards. Was it worth it? For probably negative information? But suppose it wasn't negative. Marine Corporal Pietrov reporting to Captain, sir. Thick accent of Saint Ekaterina. No activity from intruder, sir.
Cargill here, Captain, another voice added. Yes? Do you need Kelly? Mr. Potter was able to get a line to Pietrov without leaving his scooter, but there's a problem if he has to go further. Pietrov's fine, Number One. Good work, Potter. Corporal, can you see Mr. Kelly? Is he all right?
The gunners waved at me, sir. He is on duty in Number Two airlock.
Good. Report any activity by intruder immediately, Corporal.
Blaine switched off as the warning horns sounded again. 50 kilos lifted from his chest as the ship's acceleration eased. Tricky thing, this, he thought. Got to balance between getting too close to Cal and cooking the crew, and just killing everybody from the G-stress. At his station forward, one of the helmsmen leaned against the padding of his couch. His partner leaned against him to touch helmets. For an instant, they cut their mics, while Quartermaster's mate First Class Orontes spoke to his partner.
My brother wanted me to help him with his wet ranch on Aphrodite, and I thought it was too goddamn dangerous, so I joined the flippin' Navy.
Commander Sinclair, have we enough energy for a report to fleet?
Aye, Skipper. The engines hold very well indeed. Yon object is nae so massive as we thought, and we've hydrogen to spare.
Good. Blaine called the communications room to send out his report. Intruder aboard. Cylinder, ratio of axes 4-1. Uniform metallic in appearance, but close inspection impossible until acceleration eases off. Suggest Lermontov attempt to recover the sail, which would decelerate rapidly with no pod ahead of it. Estimated time of arrival, New Scotland. Suggest MacArthur put into orbit around uninhabited moon of New Scotland. No evidence of life or activity aboard alien, but... It was a very large but, Rod thought. Just what was that thing? Had it fired on him deliberately? Was it under command? Or what kind of robot could pilot it across light years of normal space? What would it, whoever or whatever was commanding it, think of being stuffed into the hangar deck of a battle cruiser, cut loose from its shrouds? Hell of an undignified end to 35 light years of travel. And there was nothing he could do to find out. Nothing at all. MacArthur's situation wasn't so critical. Renner had her well under control. But neither Blaine nor Cargill could leave his station.
and he wasn't about to send junior officers to investigate that thing.
Is it over?
Sally's voice was plaintive.
Is everything all right?
Yes. Rod shuddered involuntarily as he thought of what might have happened. Yes, it's aboard, and we've seen nothing about it other than its size. It won't answer signals. Now, why did he feel a little twinge of satisfaction? Because she'd just have to wait like the rest of them. MacArthur plunged on, whipping around Cal so close that there was a measurable drag from the corona. But Renner's astrogation was perfect, and the field held nicely. They waited. At two gravities, Rod could leave the bridge. He stood with an effort, transferred to a scooter, and started aft. The elevators led him down as he moved through the ship, and he stopped at each deck to note the alert crewmen still at their posts, despite being at general quarters too long. MacArthur had to be the best ship in the Navy, and he'd keep her that way. When he reached Kelly's position at the airlock to hangar deck, there was still nothing new. "You can see there's hatches or something there, sir," Kelly said. He pointed with a flash. As the light flicked up the alien craft, Rod saw the ruins of his boats crushed against the steel decks. "And it's done nothing?"
"Not one thing, Captain. It come in, whapped against the decks. Like to threw me into a bulkhead. That thing didn't come in fast, but she come down hard. Then nothing. My files, me, the middies who keep swarming around here. None of us seen a thing, Captain."
"Just as well," Rod muttered. He took out his own light and played it on the enormous cylinder. The upper half vanished into the uniform black of the field. His light swept across a row of conical knobs, each a meter in diameter, and three times that in length. He searched, but there was nothing there. No tag ends of the shrouds, which ought to be hanging from them. No visible opening in the knob through which the shroud could have been reeled. Nothing. "Keep watching it, Kelly. I want continuous surveillance." Captain Rod Blaine went back to the bridge with no more information than he'd had before, and sat staring at his screens. Unconsciously, his hand moved to rub the bridge of his nose. Just what in God's name had he caught? 8. The Alien. Blaine stood rigidly at attention before the massive desk. Fleet Admiral Howland Cranston, Commander-in-Chief of His Majesty's Forces Beyond the Coal Sack, glared across a rose-teak desk, whose exquisite carvings would have fascinated Rod if he'd been at liberty to examine them. The Admiral fingered a thick sheaf of papers.
"Know what these are, Captain?"
"No, sir."
"Requests that you be dismissed from the service?"
"Half the faculty at Imperial University. A couple of padres from the church and one bishop. Secretary of the Humanity League. Every bleeding heart this side of the coal sack wants your scalp."
"Yes, sir."
There didn't seem to be anything else to say.
Rod stood at stiff attention, waiting for it to be over. What would his father think? Would anyone understand?
Cranston glared again. There was no expression in his eyes at all. His undress uniform was shapeless. Miniatures of a dozen decorations told the story of a commander who'd ruthlessly driven himself and his subordinates beyond any hope of survival. The man who fired on the first alien contact the human race ever made, Cranston said coldly. Crippled their probe. "You know, we only found one passenger and he's dead? Life system failure, maybe?" Cranston fingered the sheaf of papers and viciously thrust them away. "Damned civilians. They always end up influencing the Navy. They leave me no choice. All right. Captain Blaine, as Fleet Admiral of this sector, I hereby confirm your promotion to Captain and assign you to command of His Majesty's battlecruiser MacArthur. Now sit down." As Rod dazedly looked for a chair, Cranston grunted. "That'll show the bastards. Try to tell me how to run my command, will they? Blaine, you're the luckiest officer in the service. A board would have confirmed your promotion anyway, but without this, you'd never have kept that ship."
"Yes, sir."
It was true enough, but that couldn't keep the note of pride out of Rod's voice. And MacArthur was his.
"Sir?" Have they found out anything about the probe? Since we left the probe in orbit, I've been busy in the yards getting MacArthur refitted.
We've opened it, Captain. I'm not sure I believe what we found, but we've got inside the thing.